Welcome to the Lemp Report Live. Today, Japan's biggest food trend, food shortages are coming to your shelves. Is the fall of delivery services upon us? More accolades for Trader Joe's and Cornell's new program is a boon for food entrepreneurs. A reminder to check out Food News Today on supermarketguru.com for the most up-to-the-minute news feed courtesy of our partnership with Zizen. Check it out. Last week, Walmart CEO Doug McMillon told the Morgan Stanley Global Consumer and Retail Conference that the retailer is rethinking its approach to center store, asking suppliers to cut costs or they risk the chain reducing the number of facings for the brand on the shelf. He also added that they will allocate space to private and tertiary brands to the degree we need to make prices work for families. Walmart wants to lower prices. Also last week, Campbell's, on its quarterly earnings call, announced that it's pushing through a fourth round of price increases this year to offset core inflation, 16% increase in snacks and beverages. On the same call, they announced that their quarter ending October 31st, 2022, was a strong one. Organic net sales grew 15% and expect the full year growth to be 7 to 9%. Now, we've seen the Walmart-Campbell fight before. We saw who won, Walmart, and we wonder who will win this time around. Let's get started. So, Sally, out of Japan, there's this annual event where they have the Dish of the Year. This is an award that's given out every year by the Gurnavi Research Institute. They run a popular website which allows users to search for the top restaurants across Japan. And every year they create a dish of the year. What's the 2022 dish of the year?
Drum roll. The 2022 dish of the year is frozen food, Phil. Apparently, the pandemic has really had an impact on Japanese shoppers, and frozen foods have actually gone up 20%. And so what's happening is retailers are getting more into frozen prepared meals for people. And what I love about hearing about this is that the convenience stores are really getting into this too, which the Japanese have always had really cool convenience stores.
Yeah, they have. And there's one new one that is called At Frozen. It opened in August. They sell 1,500 frozen food options in 420 square meters. That's about 4,000 square foot. There was a store in New York City a few years ago, I don't even know if it's still open, that only sold frozen foods. But to your point, I think what's really interesting about this, it's not your run-of-the-mill frozen foods that you would find in a Kroger or a Walmart. These are frozen foods that are frozen by restaurants and chefs to really bring up the whole high quality to a whole different level. And talking about that, there's a new trend that's going on here in the U.S. Called thaw and eat foods. So these are frozen foods that all you do is you thaw them and you eat them. You don't have to microwave them. Why? Why do we need this?
It seems like it requires some really advanced planning too. You know, it conjures up memories of not thawing that turkey out in time. You know, you've got to start the day before. So I'm not sure about that trend, but it does seem like people are looking for different options when it comes to food, convenient foods, things that they can prepare quickly and that they don't have to go and buy a bunch of different ingredients for.
So, you know, if we look at major companies getting into this thaw and eat food category, Nestle has actually coined a term called SMEALS, S-M-E-A-L-S, to refer to small meals that are catering to modern consumption habits. Smucker's has a new line of Uncrustables that go well beyond that whole peanut butter thing. They're filled with meat and cheese. They're called, and also Nestle has a new brand out called Deli Witch, a line of soft crusted Hot Pockets that don't require heating. Kraft Heinz has a product called Launch Box. Eggo now has Eggo waffles that are frozen, but you don't have to put them in your toaster. I'm not sure how difficult it is to put an Eggo in your toaster. Marie Callender's has frozen pies. Edwards has frozen pies. So I guess what I'm curious about is whether or not, you know, this trend really is going to change the way we eat. I mean, the reason that we microwave things or we put the Eggo waffles in a toaster is to make them warm or hot because we like, you know, hot foods and so on. Now we're just getting these foods that are going to be at room temperature. And I'm just wondering what the impact of that's going to be. And also, will there now be a new backlash towards microwaves? When microwave ovens first came out, a lot of people really didn't want to use them because they were afraid of the microwave energy, you know, zapping into their food and then into their bodies. So I'm just wondering whether or not, you know, we change our eating habits to go for non-warm food, and also whether the microwave manufacturers are going to be in trouble.
Yes, it will be interesting to see. And of course, Phil, I agree with you. Like wanting your food warm, I can't imagine thawing out a waffle and eating it, you know, not warmed up.
Yeah, I agree with you. So, you know, there's a lot of food shortages that are anticipated this holiday season because of our weather, floods, hurricanes, extreme heat, drought. Large bouts of rainfall. In fact, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration reports that in 2022, there have been 15 climate disaster events in the U.S. The losses are about $1 billion each. So we go down the list of what products are going to be in short supply as a result of this. We have rice. Obviously, you know, when you're growing rice, you need a lot of water. Most rice comes from California. We have a major water shortage here in California, so a lot less rice. Also, because of the hurricanes in Florida, a lot less citrus. That means a lot less orange juice. Imported orange juice, obviously, from Brazil will still be on the shelves, but that's it. Also, beef. Now, here's an interesting stat, that beef slaughter is up 13%. That's the good news. But because of the weather problems, there's not enough grass or other feed. It's too expensive for the cows. So they're actually culling the cows, meaning killing the cows, because they can't feed them. So we're going to have that problem upon us as well. I mean, we've been talking for a long time here about how climate change is really affecting our food supply, both price-wise as well as shortage-wise. But I think that a lot of people are going to be very, very disheartened as they walk in the supermarket over the next few weeks during the holiday season and really seeing these shortages again. We saw them in the beginning of the pandemic. People freaked out. I don't think people are going to freak out now. And stores are doing a great job to avoid that by fanning out products on a shelf so we don't see empty shelves. But still, I think, you know, I think it's a major problem. Also, what we have to talk about is there's a fight going on now to pay food delivery workers $23 an hour. So this is in New York City. There are 60,000 app-based food delivery workers, 60,000 people. And what they're talking about is certainly during the pandemic, everybody was getting delivery everything. Now they're not getting delivery. And, you know, this group wants to, you know, up it to get $23 an hour, not including tips, by 2025. And I just have to wonder if the price does go to that amount of money, $23 an hour, whether or not there's going to be a lot of people who stop delivering just because they can't afford to pay that. Right now, on average, they make about $14.18 an hour. So we're talking about a significant increase. Do you think that this is going to kill the whole idea of delivery by raising these hourly wages?
Well, I'm not sure that it will kill it, but yes, these, you know, there are consequences for that. And, you know, we've heard from some of the CEOs of these app delivery companies that, you know, that they would have to rethink their services, cut back on services, raise prices. But then we also have to think about, you know, about people. And we have to think about that, you know, everyone deserves to make a living wage. And thinking about people that are, you know, working so hard, especially these delivery workers, you know, who we've seen in, you know, one of our most difficult times in this country during a pandemic, what would we have done without these people? And many of these people are still living in poverty because they are not making a living wage. And to add to that, you know, part of that $23 an hour, there is a portion that's just under $2 that would allow for them to have some workers' compensation. So as a contract employee for an app delivery-based company, you don't have the same benefit as a regular full-time employee. So with that raise, you would also get the workers' comp.
Yeah, and also also it can be a dangerous job. If you take a look this year or since 2020 in New York City alone, 33 restaurant delivery workers have been killed. Whether people want to steal their bikes or, I guess, steal their food or whatever else. But it's amazing to me, you know, and we don't have the amount of workers that have been attacked or robbed, have their expensive e-bikes stolen, but just 33 people getting killed. It just doesn't make sense. And I don't think that the answer is going to be robots. You know, everybody's talked about drones and robotic delivery. And yes, to your point, everybody deserves a living wage, but somebody's going to have to pay for this. And that means that when you're, you know, going to be ordering from Uber Eats or Grubhub or whatever else, you're going to see some charges there. Let's talk about Trader Joe's on a much happier note. Trader Joe's just won an award. Not an award. They came out number one in a survey from the Brand Intimacy Study from MBLM. They have an analysis of 1.4 billion words that are used by consumers in discussion of brands. And they found that Trader Joe's is the leader in creating emotional connections with its customers. No surprise. I mean, every time I go to Trader Joe's, I want to wear one of those shirts and I want to ring those bells.
Yeah, you just want to hang out with the people that work there, don't you? They're always so happy, and the store is colorful and friendly. They vary their products that they're offering at different times, and they create a lot of hype and excitement around new products. So it isn't surprising. Now, what do you think of Costco being second on the list, Phil?
I was shocked because I like Costco. I think that the Costco meat department is probably the best meat department in the nation. But, you know, as far as friendly service or just having, you know, the same camaraderie in the store, I don't get that from my Costco. Do you?
We don't shop at Costco because we don't have one close to us. So so it's been a long time since I've actually been in a store, but I remember it as being, you know, it's a lot bigger than a Trader Joe's. And so I was also surprised to see Costco as number two.
And last, Cornell University has this Cornell Food Venture Center. This is designed to help entrepreneurs take their family recipes, their homemade eats into commercial food production. I think that this is great. And what they've now done is they've created the Food Product Development Certificate. Talk to us a bit about that.
Yes, this is very exciting for people who are developing new food products, trying to get into the industry, because there are a lot of things to learn beyond coming up with an idea or coming up with a product. And so what this certificate is, it's an online course, and we already know Cornell has great credibility when it comes to their programs that are that revolve around the food business and their research. So what you can learn if you sign up for this online course that takes about 35 hours, I think is what it said. But what you can learn is you can learn about cost. You can learn about safety. You can learn about scaling. You can learn about all of these things that, you know, that you won't learn just coming up with an idea for a product, but that you need in order to successfully get your product out there.
And also, you know, with our new product reviews, we see these fledgling companies all the time that if they had, you know, someone like Cornell holding their hand, they would probably do a lot better. So kudos for Cornell for coming up with this certificate. On Farm Food Facts, I spoke with USFRA's CEO, Aaron Fitzgerald, about COP27. She was there and gives us the insider scoop. For the complete episode, just go to usfarmersandranchers.org. Let's take a look. The farmers are there. The farmers are part of the conversation and dialogue. But what I'm hearing you say is they're not really being heard. They don't have the presence that they've got. How do we change that? How do we instill both domestically here in the U.S. to farmers and ranchers that say, you got to be at these events? And also, how do we tell these events that if you don't have this farmer voice, you know, you're not going to come up with something that is realistic, accurate, and workable?
Yeah, well, we had Marilyn Hershey from U.S. Farmers and Ranchers included in the dialogue, and she did a great job really saying, bring it down to reality of actually what she's doing on her farm to both be a solution to mitigate methane. That was a key conversation, and as well as food waste, right? She's taking food waste, combining to her digester, and generating renewable energy in her community. I think it's a perfect example of what and many in business call circular economy. Our farmers have been doing that for some time. So really getting those practical on the ground insights from our farmers. And then second, just like really having the authenticity. If you're going to have a food pavilion and you're going to have conversations to really make certain that I was walking around and I was hearing quite a bit like farmers should, you know, we need to make certain that every single time in a session panel or a discussion that you have the entirety of the value chain represented, and that making certain that our farmers are included in that. So that's going to take more farmers to be admitted into the climate change discussion. We want to make certain that the farmers' constituency amount of badges as an NGO constituency is really increased, and that whenever there's a pavilion or entities that are working on food systems, that they include farmers and ranchers in that dialogue. We certainly saw an increase in that this year, but for how high the stakes are, I would say that we still have a long ways to go. But it was definitely an improvement from the prior year. You know, last year we called on that. We said it needed to happen, Food and Ag, and this year we did see quite an improvement, at least food and agriculture being included in the conversation. Now we have a job to do, get our farmers completely included.
On today's Bullseye, Hellman's has teamed up with Muddling Memories, an experimental mixology company in Brooklyn, New York. What did they come up with? A recipe for holiday eggnog using Hellman's mayonnaise instead of eggs. I guess they want to rename it Mayonog? Eggnog's origins date back to Britain back in the 13th century. Traditionally, it's eggs, milk, spices, and of course, rum. One note, George Washington, yes, the George Washington, has had his own recipe for eggnog that, in addition to rum, included brandy, whiskey, and sherry. Let's get back to Hellman's. Let's not forget that Hellman's ingredients also includes eggs and egg yolks. In fact, they're the third and fourth ingredient after oil and water. This mayonnaise recipe is 1/4 cup Hellmann's mayo, 3 ounces of whole milk, 3 ounces of heavy cream, 3 ounces of simple syrup, 1/2 teaspoon of nutmeg, 1/2 teaspoon of vanilla extract, 1 teaspoon of cinnamon, 1.5 ounces of rum, 1.5 ounces of brandy, and 1.5 ounces of cognac. Now, I haven't made it, so I have no idea how it tastes, but for the reviews that I saw, for the most part, everybody's giving it kudos. By the way, the brand also suggests that you can use mayonnaise to make snickerdoodle cookies. I don't expect either recipe to be the most important holiday food trend, but I do applaud the brand's marketing prowess. Not many of us think about mayonnaise or Hellmann's around the holidays, especially as a featured ingredient. But this promotion is smart. It has us talking about one of America's iconic staple brands in a hip new light. They even partnered with Amy Fontaine's New York City Bar and Restaurant to add it to their menu until December 15th. So you New Yorkers, hurry, get there, 922 2nd Avenue before Thursday. It's a cool place that specializes in adding a twist to classics like ribeye French dip, prosciutto mac and cheese, fabulous pizzas, and a double smash burger made with a blend of dry-aged rib cap and Wagyu beef. Normally, the brands that utilize marketing gimmicks are lame and they're goofy. Not this one. It's a smart one. Good for you, Hellmann's. Thanks for joining us today on Leopard Report Live. Looking forward to seeing you back here next week. Same time, same place. And in the meantime, don't forget to visit supermarketguru.com to look at our archives as well as our daily postings. Thanks for joining us.